ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Taylor Swift is a secret operative. Big Pharma are suppressing a cancer cure, and Kate Middleton has been replaced by a body double. They're just some of the conspiracy theories circulating today. And it can often feel like the number of people who believe them is growing astronomically. But my guest today says there are not necessarily more people who believe these ideas than there have been in the past. And he says that there are ways to put the brakes on some of the most worrying trends. We'll talk about that soon. But first, we'd like to hear from you. Have you ever believed something and later realized it was a conspiracy theory, or had friends or family who have gone down that road in the past? What's that experience been like for you? Speaking of instances in which we may find ourselves believing something that doesn't quite seem entirely true, recently, friend of the program, columnist Kerry Sackville, found herself in exactly that situation. Kerry, welcome.
Hello.
Tell us about your experience lately, what you call in your recent column, Katespiracy.
Yeah, I got very swept up in all the talk about Kate when she was supposedly missing. Now, I'm going to be honest, I don't think I actually necessarily believed anything sinister, but I was having a great time discussing all the options. And in a couple of my WhatsApp groups, there were theories flying around, and people were talking about their friends who had friends who had friends at the palace. And in fact, they're having serious marital problems, or she's actually disappeared and is refusing to come back, or, you know, she's been replaced by a body double. And it was great fun to get caught up in it. And I felt incredibly chastened when her video came out saying that she was actually ill with cancer. And I realized that I'd kind of lost myself in being swept up in the excitement of getting on board a conspiracy theory.
Well, what do you think was driving that? I mean, you're not normally, you know, putting your head into all the conspiracy theories, but you and your mates were really getting into it. What was it?
I actually think that it's just that the news cycle at the moment is so grim, and it's so difficult, and life is really, I think, difficult for most of us. And it just was a lovely distraction, I think, that felt very low stakes. So I could giggle about this with my friends. It was very easy to forget that Kate Middleton is a real human person with real human feelings, because she is so removed from us. You know, she's literally a princess in a palace. And I think it was just something fun and distracting that took us all away from our everyday lives, which, as I said, can be, you know, quite challenging.
There was those first, you know, body double theories, etc. But then the photo came out and it had been altered. So there was more theories on top of it all. And I have to say, that was when I started leaning in.
Yeah. Well, you know, before that, I was sort of enjoying the whole discussions, but, you know, it was really like, oh, keeping it at a bit of arm's length. And then the photo came out and I was actually quite disappointed, because it was clear that everything was fine. There she was with her family. We were all being ridiculous. And then when the photo was recorded, it was like, oh, wow, we can keep going. This is actually, you know, something really fun and mysterious and exciting. And it allowed this kind of game to keep going for a bit longer, and for the theories just to start, you know, going mad. And you know, then it was like the whole body double and she's not actually there, and they've taken her face from the cover of Vogue. And, you know, that always seemed like a bit of a stretch to me. But as I said, it was just so much fun. And I think with any kind of conspiracy theory, a big part of it is that you feel like you've got this special knowledge. You know, you're reading up about, oh, it was altered in this way and that way, and this is how it happened. And you also feel like you're part of some big group that's getting on board. And there were the memes and the jokes and the messages, and so you feel like you're participating in something, which is why I think conspiracies can become so enticing to people.
But Kerry Sackville, this is where I look very seriously in your eyes and say, when it came out that Kate was absent because she'd been diagnosed with cancer, that obviously changed how you felt about the hilarity of the game.
I felt absolutely mortified. I still do. And, you know, I wrote a column about it, about my remorse and about how I forgot her humanity in all of this. And, in fact, I didn't need to write the column because I hadn't put anything online. I hadn't written publicly about, you know, getting on board with some of these kind of group discussions and conspiracy theories. But I wanted to because I know that so many of us did it and so many of us participated in it. And so I wanted to write, I guess, my own mea culpa and say I was one of them. I'm sorry, but if you know, if I can get into it, other people can too. And just for all of us to be a bit more aware. And I felt particularly bad because you know I was an adult when Princess Diana was killed, so I vividly recall when you know the other princess in the palace was killed, and we all suddenly were reminded that she was just a person and that she was mortal and could be taken out by a car of all things. So I you know it was even worse that I could forget that Princess Kate and Princess Catherine was also a mere mortal and that this could hurt her.
This is where you have to remove Kate Middleton from your WhatsApp group. What did you think then in reflection, having been involved in all of that, about a person's ability to start getting sucked in?
I think that it can happen to any of us. And as I said, for me, it wasn't so much believing it, even though, you know, after the photo was recalled, I did think something strange was going on. But I think it is so easy for us to be swept up into these kind of these chats, these theories, these conspiracies. And I think we all have to just remember that. Yeah, there's something called Occam's razor, which is the principle that the most simple explanation is usually the accurate one. And the most simple explanation in this case was that, you know, she was exactly where the palace said she was going to be. She was at home recovering from surgery and she was ill. But unfortunately for the media and for social media, the simplest explanation is usually the most boring. And we don't want boring. We want to be entertained. You know, these kind of news stories are actually entertainment and we want to be distracted from our everyday lives. So we are very loath to believe it. But that doesn't mean that it's not true. So unfortunately, yeah, the most boring explanation is usually the one that's true.
I'm proud of you for stepping up and admitting your crimes. I think you've learned something, hopefully this time, Kerry Sackville.
I think I have. I hope we all have.
Indeed.
But I am a little cynical.
Thank you for joining us, Kerry Sackville, to discuss. Let's talk to someone now who has looked at what it is about these theories that can be so alluring. Dr. Matthew Marks is a senior lecturer in psychology at La Trobe University who specialises in conspiracy theories and why we believe them. Dr. Marks, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you for having me, Jacinta.
We've been hearing from Kerry about her experience with the Kate Middleton conspiracy theory. What are some of the other examples that we're seeing of conspiracy theories at the moment?
Well, I think recently, you know, Taylor Swift was visiting Australia, and I think there were some conspiracy theories in the US around her alleged involvement in US politics and shaping people in terms of voting. So there was an allegation that she was a planted sort of mole or CIA operative that was convincing people to vote for Joe Biden. And of course, when her boyfriend made that touchdown or scored the winning points in the NFL Super Bowl, the Biden campaign sort of tweeted, you know, just like we planned. So really leaning into that conspiracy theory that she is, you know, a cooperative, you know, co-op agent.
And there's still lots around. COVID was a real time where conspiracy theories seemed to spring up quite extensively.
Yeah, that's right. So we're still exiting from COVID, I guess, and during COVID, you know, this is really, I think, as somebody who studies social psychology, if we were to think about a series of circumstances or an experiment where we would make people experience uncertainty and make them feel a sense of powerlessness and really focus on the same thing, these were the conditions that really brought about many explanations for what was going on in society. And so many people started talking about conspiracy theories then, and so explanations for why we were being, you know, isolated and why we were staying at home. And so explaining the origins of the virus or the vaccinations or how the vaccinations were developed rather quickly, all of those sorts of explanations became popular discourse during that time.
But what actually defines a conspiracy theory and how is it different to, say, misinformation or disinformation?
Sure. So mis or disinformation could involve a conspiracy theory. And often when we talk about conspiracy theories, pardon me, we're talking about a malevolent plot orchestrated by two or more powerful people. And it's something that's in the public interest that's kept secretive. So it has to involve this malevolent intent. It needs usually powerful people that are orchestrating this in secret. And so it could involve governments. It could involve corporations. It can't involve Ned and Fred down the road taking your bins on bin night. It has to be something that we're really kind of, focused on as a public.
And the malevolence is such a feature, isn't it? We don't construct conspiracy theories about how wonderful things are happening behind our backs.
No, certainly. And you could think of the Easter Bunny, and depending on who's listening here, I'm not sure what
Be very careful.
But we can think about particular holidays that we have, and how parents go about orchestrating an explanation about particular events involving characters. And we would sort of also define that as a conspiracy, but it's not really motivated by the same aspects because it doesn't involve that malevolent intent. And so the motivations that underlie malevolence would be quite different to those for benevolent conspiracy theories.
There's a text here, susceptibility to conspiracy theories, perhaps a similar psychopathology to online romance scams. In both cases, the victim's adherents want to believe them despite their non-credibility because they excite and engage us. Are they two words that you think about, excitement and engagement?
Definitely. So we see often in the media lots of examples of things that we would term are conspiracies, involvement by governments or corporations or shadowy figures that maybe are involved in corruption and those sorts of things. And people often won't take much notice of them. It's the kind of salacious or the excitement factor that really draws people in. And so there have been studies that really have demonstrated this quite well, where presenting the same explanation but just making it more exciting in one case does lead people to endorse or believe or agree with the conspiracy theory much more so than when it's described as sort of a mundane action.
Well, and that's probably a great understanding around the Kate Middleton example that we just heard Kerry Sackville describe. It's fascinating because it seems so far-fetched. What is so alluring to people about these kinds of ideas?
Well, I think with that particular example, many people are invested in the royals, and I think we have the features or the conditions that sort of play into a conspiracy theory. So, you know, the royals are largely known as a somewhat secretive family. They're in the public eye. People are quite interested in them. There are TV series about them. People are invested in knowing every aspect of their lives. So when someone disappears or goes missing or is not in the public eye for a length of time, afterwards people want to know, you know, what's happening. And because no information is given, then some people might start creating narratives explaining their sudden absence. And so we heard all sorts of explanations, like Kate Middleton was being replaced by the Marchioness of Cholmondeley. So we all got to learn about her and her supposed involvement. And then, you know, with the doctored photo and the explanation that Kate Middleton was just like any other mum or parent and photoshopping, kind of got a little bit absurd. And people really leaned into that.
I leant in a little bit then as well, I have to admit, because it was something that looked like there had been, you know, a hiding of something.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, I'm a tragic X-Files fan from way back when, and the audience might know. And so like Fox Mulder with the poster on the wall, I want to believe. And so I think that really explains why many people are really engaged in conspiracy theorizing, is because in some sort of facet, they really want to believe that. It's exciting. It's an alternate explanation for the events. And so for some people, that does explain why they agree with conspiracy theories.
We've always had conspiracy theories, but it feels like with the rise of social media and I guess AI now entering the scene, there's an increasing belief in them. You've done some research on that. Does that bear out? Are we more likely? Is there more of us getting into conspiracy theories?
That's an excellent question, and it's an empirical one. And we've thought about this sort of a question for a while. And during the pandemic, we decided to test it and assess people's belief in 10 conspiracy theories over a period of 6 months during 2021, from around March till October in that year. And what we find is that at any one time, you know, people will endorse conspiracy theories, whether it's about Big Pharma being involved in the cover-up of medicines for cancer, you know, in suppressing cures for profit, or 5G causing harm and people are aware of that. Those sorts of beliefs, generally, whilst the large proportion doesn't believe them, maybe somewhere between sort of 10 and 20% might believe at any one time point. What we find that's interesting is that across all time points, the number of people who believe them at all time points is about half of that. So there's a subset of people who are very fixed in their beliefs, but there's also a subset of people that change their beliefs over time. And I think for us, that's interesting because it shows that people can sort of fall into and fall out of conspiracy theories over time, but it is somewhat very gradual process, and it's a small minority of people that occurs to.
Chris in Geelong makes a great point here. The main driver behind conspiracy theories is fear. Agree?
There is an element of fear or threat. And so one of the dominant theories in terms of explaining why people might be attracted or find conspiracy theories alluring does suggest that it's to satisfy these motives. And so an epistemic motive, which is to know or to gain certainty. And the other one is an existential motive, which is to reduce threat in the environment. And so that's really to gain more certainty about what's occurring. And so the threatening nature, because they are a malevolent explanation of the world events. For some people, having that narrative and being able to explain away why bad things are happening to us, why these significant events are occurring, leads people to think that, you know, the world is a predictable place, right? That we can understand what's going on. And then there's another element too, which is a social motive. And so I think to some extent, listening to Kerry's story and also thinking about recent conspiracy theories and when people share them, this social motive, this idea of maintaining a positive sense of the self and the groups that you belong to, and having that positive sense is a real driver for some people in believing conspiracy theories.
Can you solve all our problems in 30 seconds? Is there anything that we can do to build a better world so that these conspiracy theories aren't spreading the way they are?
I don't have 30 seconds is, well, so I think transparency, because trust is a key part of conspiracy theories. So, and it's usually distrust in authorities. And so transparency is a key part that I think, or a key feature that we can build into our environments. And whether or not that's transparency in terms of how social media works, or transparency in how governments make decisions, I think those sorts of factors support people to, you know, be less reliant on conspiracy theories. Also, if we think about the pandemic in sort of recent times, it's likely that people engaged in conspiracy theorizing during the pandemic and have no need to do that anymore. And so that kind of uncertainty and sense of powerlessness and feeling disaffected, all of those kind of feelings that, you know, are kind of factors from the environment, I think lead some people to engage in conspiracy theories more. And that's something that we should sort of think about as well.
I think you solved it. Took a little slightly longer than 30 seconds, but you've done a very good job. Matthew Marks, thank you so much for joining us, senior lecturer in psychology at La Trobe University, who specializes in conspiracy theories and why we believe them. And a big thanks to Kerry Sackville, a columnist for the Sydney Morning Herald and an author.
It's easier than ever to hear your favorite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.